Silence. Silence, when we think about it, is normally considered or perceived to be an absence, an emptiness, a lack. Yet silence holds a profound power that resonates throughout human experience. Silence is a space where thoughts come together, where inner strength is cultivated, and where unspoken truths find their voice. In a world saturated with noise, silence offers a refuge for introspection. Silence possesses an undeniable capacity to shape perceptions, to influence outcomes, and ultimately, silence speaks volumes. Through this season of Lent, of which we are in the fourth Sunday today, I've been preaching this sermon series called A Week of Holy Terror, looking at the events from Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday, the significant events that we don't often speak of, events in which we see the terror that was rained down upon Jesus. Our scripture for today continues the story of Holy Thursday. Holy Thursday is the day in which Jesus and his disciples celebrated the Passover meal together. And then when it was dark, he led the disciples out of Jerusalem, out of the city, and up to the Mount of Olives to a place called Gethsemane. And there he prayed. But then Judas came with a small mob and arrested him and carried him back into Jerusalem to the palace of the high priest and brought him before the council known as the Sanhedrin. And they tried him there. First, they attempted to try him for treason, but they couldn't get their witnesses' stories to corroborate with one another. And so then the high priest asked Jesus if he were the Messiah. And Jesus said, yes, he was. And they found him guilty of the crime of blasphemy. And they condemned him there to death. But the Jews were ruled by the Romans, and they did not have the authority to impose capital punishment on anyone. So they needed to take Jesus to another trial, to be brought before the Roman governor, Pilate. Pilate served as governor or prelate over Judea for about 10 years. He was removed when, after one insurrection, he was unduly harsh on the people. It was too much for even the Romans to stomach, and so they relocated him somewhere else. Pilate was no friend of the Jews, and he sought to hurt them whenever he could. But on this day, this Friday morning, the chief priests and scribes take Jesus to Pilate. And they had to do it early in the morning. They had to get all their work done in the darkness because the Romans began their trials at daybreak. And they brought Jesus to Pilate, and Pilate asked him the first question: Are you king of the Jews? What we have here is not really a trial, or at least it's a very truncated version of it. It's the story that Mark offers us in his gospel. And if you recall, Jesus was found guilty of blasphemy for claiming to be the Messiah, but the Romans had no laws against blasphemy. So they transliterated the term Messiah into something the Romans would understand, and they called him King of the Jews, which would have made him guilty of treason. So we're back to Jesus being tried for treason. Pilate asks, "Are you King of the Jews?" And Jesus' answer is very short: "You say so." Meanwhile, the chief priests were there also at this trial, accusing Jesus of other things as well. And Pilate hears all this and takes into consideration, and he turns to Jesus, who's silent, and says, "Have you no answer? All these charges they're bringing against you, don't you have some defense. But Jesus said nothing. And Pilate, we are told, was amazed at his quiet, his strength. And then we are told that there was a custom that at this festival that Pilate would release a prisoner, a Jewish prisoner who had been arrested by the Romans, and give them a pardon and let them go free. And so the people began asking that he do this. Hey, you promise us a prisoner every year, and we want you to release Barabbas. Barabbas had been the leader of some insurrection against the Romans. We don't know who or what or any details. But in this rebellion, Barabbas had been responsible for killing one or more people, probably Romans. And so he was being held in jail for murder and insurrection. But the crowd asked that Barabbas be set free. And Pilate asked them back, well, what about this man, you know, the king of the Jews? If someone's really your king, shouldn't you want him to be released? And they said no. He knew what was going on. He knew that it was jealousy that the chief priest and the council had arrested Jesus, that they wanted him out of the way. They were jealous of his power and his influence over the people. What do you want me to do with this man, king of the Jews, if you don't want him released? And they shout back those horrible words, crucify him. Pilate asks again, what's he done? What's he done that's so bad that deserves crucifixion? And the crowd is adamant, crucify him. And so Pilate goes with the will of the crowd, and he releases Barabbas. He has Jesus flogged and handed over to be crucified. And thus begins the day of Friday, Good Friday. Now, the overarching question that I have from both of these trials that Jesus is the question of his pervasive silence. Why is it that Jesus did not speak? Why did he not fight back against the lies told against him? In his appearance before Pilate, the only words he utters are, you say so, when Pilate asked, are you king of the Jews? And when he was before the Sanhedrin, before that, his only words were, yes, I am, when asked if he were the Messiah. Why didn't Jesus talk more? Why didn't he speak up in his own defense? Why did he allow himself to be railroaded in this manner? Well, the answer is quite simple. The answer is obedience. Jesus was being obedient to God. Just a few hours earlier, when Jesus was praying to God in Gethsemane, he implored God to remove this cup from me. But he follows it up immediately with, yet not what I want, but what you want. Now remember, Jesus had been in deep prayer for hours at this point. He knows what God's plans are. He had already warned the disciples of future events. He told them, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priest and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death. Then they will hand him over to the Gentiles. They will mock him and spit upon him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise again. Jesus knows what's going to happen to him. And the human side of him would like to avoid, if at all possible, the pain and rejection and humiliation and death that is coming to him. If at all possible, take this cup from me. Yet not what I want, but what you want. Or in other words, thy will be done. But God has a plan. And Jesus gives of himself and willingly plays his part in what God is doing. And that plan is not something God has just made up on the spur of the moment. This plan has been woven into human history for generations, even from the beginning. Jesus' silence here is a reflection of the words of the prophet Isaiah, who wrote this about God's servant. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to slaughter, he did not open his mouth. But what about free will? That's the question that comes to my mind. I'm hearing this. What about free will? Where is Jesus' choice in all this? Isn't Jesus just some pawn in God's game who has no choice of his own? No. Jesus had a choice. He could easily have left Gethsemane and just walked over the hill in the darkness of the night, never to be seen again. But he doesn't do that. No. Jesus remains wholly faithful to God in all that he does. He stays on the path of God's plan, a plan for the salvation of the world, a plan that requires the Son of God to be sacrificed. The sacrifice is to pay the price of the sins of the world. And the life of the Christ is the only suitable payment for this. And so, Jesus willingly gives himself to God's will, to God's plan. And that is why Jesus remain silent, because there's no point in speaking or arguing. He has no intention of changing the course of events that God has set out. He must be arrested. He must be tried by the Sanhedrin and handed over to Pilate, and he must be executed. He cannot change this. Jesus could try and explain all of this to the authorities, but he knows they're not going to listen to him. They're not going to believe him. They just want him out of the way. His best course of action is to say nothing, to remain silent. And only two times does he speak, and one is to answer the high priest who asks if he's the Messiah. And then he answers Pilate when asked if he is king of the Jews. The gospel that we're reading from today, the one that we call Mark, was likely written to a community of Christians who were living in a Roman city, possibly Rome itself. And in an environment like that, those Christian believers living in a Roman city could expect to be persecuted for their faith. In fact, in chapter 13, Jesus warns his followers of the persecution they can expect. Jesus tells his followers, "Beware, for they will hand you over to councils, and you will be beaten in synagogues, and you will stand before governors and kings because of me, as a testimony to them." And this warning that they will stand before governors and kings sounds a lot like what Jesus endures during Holy Week. His silence, his behavior is offered as a model for those Christians who themselves may endure persecution, for those that Mark is writing to. Jesus' strength and dignity become something for them to imitate. In the face of such torment, they will know that their silence is not weakness, it is power. Weakness can be observed and seen, on the other hand, in the lies of the Sanhedrin and in the voices of that crowd shouting, "Crucify him." That's the weakness. Time and time through his life, Jesus prayed. We read about it. He goes up a mountain. He takes a boat out on the water. He goes to an olive orchard. He always makes time to pray, especially in trying and difficult moments. And the reason he prays is to orient himself with God and God's will. And that is why we should make it a regular practice of prayer. Why we should find that quiet spot where we can talk and listen to God. And from our listening, to open our heart to God's will, to open our heart to God's plan and find our place within it. So what is our job in this? What is our task? What is our sacrifice even? What does God want us to do? That's what we are to ask. That's what we are to discern. And then in obedience without deviation, we are to follow that plan, walk that path as Christ did for us. And this is your challenge in these last weeks of the season of Lent, to listen intently to God and be obedient. I doubt that you will hear what you desire to hear when you speak with God. I doubt that God is going to give you next week's lottery numbers or the secret to fame and happiness. But what you will find is an offer of joy. The joy of being obedient to the one who loves us. And one last thing. There is a second layer to silence that I have to mention. And that second layer is speaking up. But not like the crowd with their cry for crucifixion, but instead a cry for those who themselves are silent because they have no voice. We need to be open to the notion that God's will is for us to speak up for others, for those that others refuse to hear. The poor, the imprisoned, the immigrant, the refugee, the minority, the children, the ill, the disabled, the elderly. Jesus calls his followers to listen for their silence and to give them voice, to become their advocate, their friend, so that they may know the joy of God. In the story, Jesus was silent, and for this he was mocked and beaten and slandered and killed. But it is our calling to speak out for the silent so that they might experience God's divine love as we have. Amen.